We bring you at this time Bjørn Bjørnsen, NBC Washington commentator, in 15 minutes of news. Mr. Bjørnsen is heard each night, Monday through Friday, at this time. Mr. Bjørnsen.
Highlights in the news today include fantastic meat prices predicted for next spring by Secretary of Agriculture Anderson. House Foreign Affairs Committee urges quick action on interim relief bill, points out that Russia has over 4 million men under arms. At least 30 killed in Jewish-Arab encounters in Palestine. 20 killed in French train wreck caused by sabotage. Molotov proposes 2 months delay in study of German peace treaty. Russians reported having currency troubles. There may be more exciting news tonight, but none that touches closer to home for each of us than the testimony submitted by Secretary of Agriculture Anderson to the House Banking Committee. He told them that unless there is an unexpected falling off in demand, I don't see how we can go through the spring without price controls on meat. A spring meat shortage, he said, might bring fantastic prices. He added that meat might be the one thing that will cause distress everywhere on the cost of living front. Anderson emphasized to the committee this statement: I am sure we are going to want to have price control on meat before very long. While on the subject of meat, Secretary Anderson's own department pointed out today that Americans are eating more meat now than when the government started the Meatless Tuesdays. Meat production by federally inspected slaughterers was running less than 300 million pounds a week when the Meatless Tuesdays began. Now it is averaging more than 400 million pounds and probably will go higher before the end of the year. But the department has a logical explanation for all of this. Winter is the season when livestock marketing normally increases and when meat production goes up. Meat consumption also goes up during colder weather. The department also points out that meatless days are achieving their goal, a reduction in the feeding of grain to livestock. Secretary Anderson told the committee that the present upward trend in meat prices need not continue, but it looks like it will unless something is done. H.B. Arthur, an economist for Swift and Company, is not quite as alarmist about meat prices as Anderson. Addressing the annual Congress of American Industry in New York, he said that if national income holds up next year, meat prices probably will be a little higher than in 1947. Arthur said that it is natural to find prices going up, with disposable incomes much more than double pre-war levels and meat supplies increased by one-fifth. The Secretary of Agriculture's testimony today, however, was not all pessimistic. He said that rains in the Southwest have given wheat prospects a boost. With reasonably good weather in 1948, the yield might be 1,200 million bushels. That would be 200 million less than this year's record crop. Secretary Anderson was only one of several who appeared before congressional committees today. Robert Nathan, one-time deputy director of Reconversion and now a private economist, proposed that Congress adopt the whole Truman cost of living program and that it push back farm and food prices 20 to 25%. He recommended using combined price control and subsidies for this. Manufactured goods prices should be rolled back 10 to 15%, Nathan said, but without subsidies. He said wage increases could be granted in many instances without price rises. Colin Gordon, vice president of the Quaker Oats Company, testified that Congress should reject the entire 10-point Truman program. Gordon was a wartime OPA official. He said his experience then convinced him that it is impossible to ration only a few selected commodities in short supply. Raymond J. Barnes, president of the North American Export Grain Association, recommended that export controls be extended to next June 30th. He also testified that margin increases on trading in grain futures have failed to hold prices down. Secretary of Labor Schwellenbach also testified before the Banking Committee. He appeared in support of Truman's request for modified wage control authority. Among other things, he was asked, what will be the general increase in wages to be demanded by labor? He replied, I have no information to enable me to answer that question. The question of cost of living at the time contracts expire probably would be a factor in determining the increase asked by labor. Labor itself hasn't given any clear-cut indication of what its wage increase demands will be. CIO President Philip Murray last night simply said that his organization was preparing to ask for higher wages. Earl Bunting, president of the National Association of Manufacturers, today asked labor to forego demands for further general wage increases. Later, he told a news conference that he thought Murray was sending up a trial balloon when he announced that his unions would ask substantial pay boosts. Bunting said, "If I were Murray, I'd send up a trial balloon and find out how the American people and the CIO members feel about another wage increase." Meanwhile, labor took another crack at the Taft-Hartley Act today. Joseph Curran and his CIO National Maritime Union filed a suit in federal court attacking the constitutionality of the provisions for non-communist oaths and financial statements. CIO President Philip Murray charged that the law is being administered in favor of employers. He asked AF&L President William Green for joint action to defeat the attack now being directed against us. At the same time, the National Labor Relations Board announced two important new decisions under the law. The first ruled that a union whose officers don't sign non-communist affidavits can't get on the ballot in a plant election, even when the election has been requested by an employer. The second asked the Supreme Court to force the Bud Manufacturing Company to reinstate with back pay a foreman whom it fired for organizing other foremen into a union at its Detroit plant in 1944. The House Foreign Affairs Committee today reported out its short-term aid authorization bill. This calls for $590 million in aid to France, Italy, Austria, and China. It urged Congress to take quick action on the measure, and the House Rules Committee cleared the bill today. Debate will begin on it tomorrow. The Rules Committee recommended that the bill be opened for amendments after 12 hours of debate, which will take place tomorrow and Friday. House Republican leaders predict that the legislation will be laid on the president's desk by the end of next week. Debate before the Rules Committee today probably offers an accurate forecast of what debate on the House floor will be like during the next 2 days. Chairman Eaton of the House Foreign Affairs Committee told the Rules Group that Russia is out to conquer the world. He cited War Department figures to show that the Russians have an army of 4,050,000. In addition, the Soviet satellites have more than 1 million men under arms. Armed strength of the free European states was placed at less than 3 million, including also 113,000 American troops in Europe. Representative Cox of Georgia, a member of the Rules Committee, asked Eaton, "What could stop Russia from taking over all of Europe in 24 hours? Eaton replied, "Not a thing." Eaton said that a practical revolution is going on in France and urged that supplies be provided without delay to France and other countries to resist communist aggression. Russia, he said, proposes to conquer the world either by internal infiltration, by revolution, or by force of arms. Cox suggested that American aid might serve only to fatten the goose for the Russian kill, and that this country might get back its supplies as the materials we sent to Japan came back to us at Pearl Harbor. Representatives Risley and Brown criticized the policy of continuing to send equipment to Russia, contending that it is not consistent with the Stop Communist Movement. Eaton replied that these shipments have nothing to do with the aid bill. Representative Bloom conceded that there are risks in the program, but emphasized that the greatest risk is not to do it. If Russia takes control of France and Italy, Bloom said, you can just as well pack up and build a fence around this country. They're trying to put us in a straitjacket. That's the Cold War. Brown suggested a danger that the United States will become weak at home, but Bloom said, God will not allow that to happen. Meanwhile, there are indications tonight that Russia is having currency trouble at home. This report comes from the State Department's Voice of America radio broadcasts. Tonight, those broadcasts, beamed overseas in 23 languages, carried a report that Russians have started wholesale runs on banks and stores in Moscow and other Soviet cities because of fear the ruble is losing its value. The report was attributed to travelers just returned from Russia. It said that crowds, anxious to exchange the Soviet currency for any durable goods, were besieging shops last week to buy dry goods, jewelry, rare books, or any other physical goods. Many stores were reported to have closed their doors for repairs or inventories. Savings banks in Moscow have now limited withdrawals to 200 rubles a day. Rumors are widespread in Russia that the Soviet government is preparing to issue a new currency, effective next Friday, which would wipe out the present currency. Coupled with this report was another that the present system of rationing would be abandoned about December 15th and its place taken by a single system of higher prices for unrationed goods. The one new and startling development at the Foreign Minister's Conference in London today came from Soviet Foreign Minister Molotov. He suggested a recess for 2 months, during which each of the four powers prepare their own drafts of a German peace treaty and submit them to the Council at the end of that time. The proposal startled and mystified the diplomats. It undoubtedly foreshadows some new move in Soviet tactics, but precisely what has got the diplomats guessing? French Foreign Minister Bidault was the only man to reply. He said that if the Council accepted the idea of a delay, it might as well go home now. It was also learned today that John Foster Dulles, the Republican advisor on the American staff, will leave for France tomorrow to study the French situation in relation to current foreign policy and report to Secretary Marshall. Some observers believe that this is a preparatory step toward a three-way agreement on a German peace treaty without Russia. The purpose of Dulles' visit would be to get assurances from the de Gaulle forces that they would also support such a move. France tonight is still battling a wave of sabotage as strikers gradually return to work. 20 persons were killed and 40 injured in the wreck of the Paris-Lille train today. Rescue workers have extricated 17 bodies and believe that three more are buried beneath the debris. Two French cabinet ministers said the wreck was caused by sabotage. A railway official said that 50 yards of rail had been unbolted. This is the 11th train wreck in France in a week, during which trains have run in spite of a strike called by the Communist General Confederation of Labor. Minister of the Interior Mock said that there was a general back-to-work movement continuing from yesterday. Meanwhile, the National Assembly, under heavy guard by troops, continued to debate Premier Schumann's five-point program against strikes. It passed the second article of the program today, providing steep penalties for keeping workers from their jobs. The vote was 412 to 183, again only the communists opposing. Jews and Arabs clashed again today in bloody machine gun battles in the Holy Land. Arab demonstrations against the partition of Palestine extended across a wide section of the Middle East from Egypt to Iraq. In Palestine alone, at least 31 persons were killed, 17 Jews and 14 Arabs. The number of wounded is reported to run into the hundreds. Outside Palestine, the biggest demonstrations were in Egypt. There, students smashed windows in American, British, Greek, and other foreign establishments. For the sixth day, futile attempts were made to find a missing C-47 transport plane with 20 persons aboard. The plane is believed lost somewhere in the border area between France and Germany. And near Jackson, Tennessee, Sheriff Tom Lewis reported tonight the capture of Charles Lee McIntosh, 24-year-old escapee of the U.S. Medical Center at Springfield, Missouri, when the federal convict's stolen light plane crashed about 25 miles south of Jackson. McIntosh and four companions fled from the U.S. Medical Center at Springfield Monday night. Three of them terrorized a farm family last night and made off with guns, clothing, money, and an automobile. No trace has been found of two of them, but officers at Springfield believe that McIntosh was the one who took a plane and flew away from a Springfield airport in a drizzling rain this morning.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have just heard Bjørn Bjørnsen, NBC Washington commentator, in 15 minutes of news. Mr. Bjørnsen is presented regularly each night, Monday through Friday, over these stations. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
This is W.W. Chaplin, substituting for Morgan Beatty, bringing you News of the World Night Special. Russia presents two faces. Violence gets worse in Palestine. We'll have a special report on what can be done about that From Paris, a direct report on crisis, home economics from Chicago. I'll be back in a moment with News of the World.
Could this now and then be a picture of your house? Dad comes home from work grumbling about the busy day he had and the headache he has. Mother's had a nervous day. She's had the house to clean, the ironing to do, and between telephone rings and afternoon visitors, she's had quite a time of it. She has a headache, too. Of course, they say that misery loves company, but I might say misery loves relief more. So for that headache relief, drink a glass of sparkling, refreshing Alka-Seltzer. Dissolve an Alka-Seltzer tablet in a glass of water, then drink the pleasant-tasting solution this makes. And for especially fast relief, make it 2 Alka-Seltzer tablets. Since it's completely dissolved before you take it, Alka-Seltzer's analgesic's ready to go right to work. And because of its effervescent base, Alka-Seltzer gets there fast, gives really speedy relief. Just try it and see. Now, how about your Alka-Seltzer supply? Running low? Well, now remember, when your tablets get down to 4, that's the time to buy some more. And say, buy an extra package, too. That's the wisest thing to do. All drugstores have Alka-Seltzer in 30 and 60-cent size packages. Now, Alka-Seltzer brings you the reporter, W.W. Chapman.
There are 2 pictures of Russia in the news tonight, as different as 2 pictures could possibly be. One portrays the Soviet Union as a giant bulging with military muscles intent on conquering the world. The other suggests that Russia is suffering from internal pains which might well seriously hinder any grandiose plans for world domination. The latter description was broadcast in 23 languages by the State Department's Voice of America program. The government radio attributed to travelers recently arrived from the Soviet Union reports that there are wholesale runs on Russian banks, that the stores in Moscow are being stampeded with frantic purchases, the result of rumors that the ruble is to lose its value. This report is that on December 5, the Soviet government will wipe out the present currency, so now a spending spree. The other picture of Russia was painted in the chamber of the House Rules Committee. Chairman Eaton of the Foreign Affairs Committee appeared there to get clearance for debate tomorrow on a bill authorizing $590 million in stop communism aid to France, Italy, Austria, and China. To back his committee's belief that speed is essential, Eaton produced figures purporting to show that Russia and her satellites have more than 5 million armed men ready for action. They face, he said, less than 3 million troops of free European states, including America's occupation force of 113,000 men. What, said one man at that meeting, could prevent Russia from taking over all of Europe in 24 hours? And Eaton said, not a thing. Russia, said Eaton, will use to gain her ends infiltration, revolution, and, as a last resort, armed force. To resist such pressure, Europe must have strength and order. There's a great deal of disorder at the moment. In Italy, there were new communist demonstrations today. The situation in France, which Representative Eaton likened to revolution, today's troops were fired upon. There have been communist-inspired mass demonstrations and strikes. The General Assembly is in emergency session. We'll have details on what has happened there direct from Paris in a few minutes. And then there is the crisis in Palestine, which reached new heights today, spread across the Arab world. There was a machine gun battle in the narrow no-man's land between the all-Jewish city of Tel Aviv and the all-Arab city of Jaffa. Unofficial estimates for 2 days of fighting range up to at least 31 dead, about evenly divided between Arabs and Jews. Nor was the violence confined to that one Holy Land trouble area. In Jerusalem, fires still burn in the Jewish quarter from Arab raids, but at the moment there is relative quiet. There was a morning uprising in Haifa, quieter now. As far from Palestine as Egypt, the violence spread. Student demonstrators in Cairo, despite police with clubs, they ranged the streets in mobs, shouting defiance to partition and throwing rocks through the windows of American, British, and Russian establishments. Even the windows of an Anglican cathedral were not spared. Violence there has been also in Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, and Aden, wherever the Arabs are. It's not believed that there will be organized violence, perhaps on a large scale, until after the British have left, until partition is actually a fact. the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem has sent word to wait for orders. What those orders will be and how they may be carried out, we can only guess. Partition of Palestine has been voted by the United Nations. What is the United Nations planning to make it work? For that story, here is John McVean.
The United Nations has voted two new countries into the world. The decision was taken without any great joy as the best of several choices, none of which was clear or easy. Now the problem that faces the UN is how to make that collective decision of the nations become a fact. Until Britain announces that the mandate is ended, keeping order in Palestine is still entirely the job of Britain. In spite of the riots and demonstrations in Palestine and in Arab capitals from Baghdad to Beirut, the best-informed quarters don't think there'll be any strong, coordinated attempt by the Arabs to take over Palestine until Britain declares the mandate ended and withdraws her troops, sometime before August 1st. From then on, until the Arab and Jewish states become fully independent, an on-the-spot UN commission of five small countries will be responsible for Palestine. Today, Secretary General Trygve Lie announced that Dr. Ralph Bunche, an American Negro, will be secretary to that commission. If the Arabs should try to take over the Jewish state and the Jewish militia could not defend the country, the Security Council will step in. It has no international police force. It's still working on plans for one. In a crisis, the Council would probably have to call on the Big Five to send troops to Palestine quick. The Big Five, including the United States, might not like it, but they've publicly declared their responsibility for world peace and security. If real trouble comes, the world may see Russian soldiers and American soldiers working together to keep the peace. A strange sight these days. This is John McVean in New York.
France is in turmoil, and the government has been talking it over, trying to figure out what to do about it. For that story, we go now to Paul Archinard in Paris.
Shots were fired on the armored forces tonight in the north of France. There were no victims, and the soldiers did not return the fire. But the situation there, which has been bad for some time, is growing worse, and an evil wind of violence is rising throughout the country. In spite of the tragic railroad accident which cost their life to 20 travelers last night, acts of sabotage continue on the French railway network. Reports there come from everywhere to that effect. There are vicious clashes between strikers and non-strikers, between the police and extremists, even between civilians and the striking occupants of railroad stations. But gunshots are a new development, and if shooting begins, there is no telling when or where it will cease. It is 5:20 in the morning here in Paris, and for part of the night, I watched the National Assembly wading through a seemingly endless communist filibuster. After 5 days of discussion on a law to quell and punish sabotage, a vote was finally taken just 1 hour ago. 413 approved the law, 183 opposed it. The law will therefore go into effect immediately. It is a temporary 3-month measure and will end on February 29. Fines of from 1,000 to 500,000 francs will be inflicted on criminals convicted of sabotage and on those who aid and abet them. Jail terms of from 6 months to 5 years will also be applied. And when the criminals are convicted of carrying arms during their sabotage operations, the sentences will be doubled. This is Paul Archinard in Paris.
Prices here at home are steadily rising. There are new suggestions that there may have to be controls. For the story on our domestic problems of prices and wages, we go now to Clifton Utley in Chicago.
This was a bad day for those looking for easy escape from inflation. Dun & Bradstreet's food price index, based on the wholesale price per pound of 31 foods, hit an all-time high of $7.17, compared with $6.39 a year back. An Associated Press survey showed Americans today are eating more meat than 2 months ago, before the government called on them to eat less meat. This is partly, though not completely explainable, on the grounds that with colder weather, meat consumption normally increases somewhat. Addressing the House Banking Committee, Secretary of Agriculture Anderson said that unless demand drops, I don't see how we can go through this to the spring without meat ceilings. Ty Anderson's statement on meat, together with Labor Secretary Schwellenbach's declaration today that the third round of wage increases, CIO head Philip Murray says he will ask, will be based on living costs when wage contracts expire in the early months of next year. Then you get something of today's inflation picture. National Association of Manufacturers head Earl Bunting, speaking in New York this afternoon, asked labor to forego demands for general wage boosts, but then Phil Murray has not customarily taken his cue from the NAM. Best guess in CIO circles hereabouts is that Murray will plump for 18 cents an hour wage boosts with the expectation of settling for dime an hour increases. The railroads today got into the Inflation Act, asking the ICC to okay a further 3% freight rate increase, bringing to 30% the total rate boost asked since July. That's the inflation picture for today, and this is Clifton Utley in Chicago.
From Minnesota comes the cheerful story of a man who knows how to use a gun, but now only aims to please. For that story, here is Ben Layton at station KSTP, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
A variety of jobs, even several at one time, is no novelty for a big man like Sheriff Ed Ryan. He made a name for himself as cook for the 408th Telegraph Battalion in France during World War I, then married a French girl and went into business with her father, running a chain of movie houses. In 1923, the Ryans moved to New York, where 6-foot-4-inch Ed took three jobs at once, a guard at Macy's, bouncer at Chin Lee's Chop House, and frontman at the George M. Cohan Theater. Since moving to Minneapolis in 1925, Ed has been a policeman. In 1942, he took the rigorous 14-week course at the FBI Academy. During World War II, he headed the Internal Security Division and was also Minneapolis police chief. Last year, Ryan became sheriff of Minnesota's most populous county, Hennepin, by the largest vote ever polled for that office. Now, Sheriff Ryan has become nighttime disc jockey for KSTP. What comments have you had from your radio public, Sheriff?
Some wonder how I can be sheriff and disc jockey at the same time. That's easy. Working at a radio station during definite hours every night locates me. I won't have to listen to that old gag, when you want a cop, you can never find one. People will know where I am. One person asked me last night, how will your radio job affect your political future? My answer was, I'm no politician, I'm a law enforcement officer. My being a disc jockey should build confidence. Folks will learn I'm human and understanding. In fact, though I prefer classical music, I'll play polkas, even boogie-woogie if they want it. This job should be a healthy stimulant to my law enforcement work. But what sheriffing might do for radio, well, let that be a moot question.
Thank you, Sheriff Ryan. This is Ben Layton in the Twin Cities, and that's what's happened in disc jockeying today.
W.W. Chaplin will return with some more late news. Is Alka-Seltzer a standby at your house? It offers such ready relief from occasional headache, acid stomach upset, the ache all over misery of colds. No home should ever be without it. So don't let that supply run low. When you go to your drugstore, buy two packages of Alka-Seltzer instead of one. Good advice. If you heed it, you'll have Alka-Seltzer when you need it.
Mothers, are you having trouble getting your growing children to take their vitamins this winter? Try giving them one-a-day brand multiple vitamin capsules. Each one-a-day brand multiple capsule contains all the vitamins for which the amount needed for grown-ups and children has been established. What's more, one capsule every day is all they take, and one-a-day brand multiple vitamin capsules are low in cost. A full 2-month supply for only $2. Ask your druggist for one-a-day brand vitamins, good for growing children and adults. Remember, for vitamins the easy way, for vitamins the thrifty way, the brand you want is one-a-day.
Now here again is W.W. Chaplin.
And here are signs of our times. It seems that even the Russian bear can back up. Mr. Molotov suggested a 2-month delay in framing the German peace treaty at the Foreign Ministers' Conference in London today. But when he got no takers, he said, I will not insist. President Truman flew down to the Florida Keys. Reasons, sleep, relaxation, and a 12-minute speech. And speaking of speeches, 17,000 copies of Secretary Marshall's recent Chicago speech have been impounded in the Soviet zone of Germany. That is, contrary to a four-power agreement that Russia joined in, but there it is. In Switzerland, King Michael of Romania says there's nothing to rumors that he'll marry Danish-French Princess Anne of Bourbon-Parma. His mother says that's right, nothing to it. But his uncle says the engagement may be announced in a few days. Presumably, Princess Anne is plucking the petals of a daisy, murmuring, he loves me, he loves me not. And that's the news of the world. This is W.W. Chaplin, substituting for Morgan Beatty and speaking for Alka-Seltzer, saying good night from the newsroom in New York.
This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.